For this segment of Tech Talk with Johnson College, Dr. Katie Leonard hosts Terry Ooms, Executive Director at the Institute for Public Policy and Economic Development, where they will discuss the nation's skills gap and explain what that means for our region.
Thank you so much for being here today, Terry.
I'm really excited to be here, Katie. Workforce development and education and training are really at the core of our economic future in Northeastern Pennsylvania.
So thank you again for being here. What I was hoping we could focus on today, which you and I talk about a lot, is this whole notion of a skills gap. So I know I always get the question, I know you always get the question, what is the skills gap? How does it affect Northeastern Pennsylvania? What could we be doing about it? So I thought we could start there. And, you know, I'm just really, curious to get your perspective and hear you share what the skills gap, how do you define it and what does it mean to Northeastern Pennsylvania?
Well, at the Institute, we define the skills gap as a mismatch. So you have jobs that are available in various sectors at various skill levels, and you have potential employees, but their education and skill requirements don't match the open jobs. And so that's what a skills mismatch is in our mind. And I think that's a fairly simple definition that could be applied nationally. And we do have a skills gap here in Northeastern Pennsylvania. We also have a individual shortage, if you will. And that may be even the bigger problem. What we're facing now is population decline nationally. Older individuals outnumber younger individuals, and the younger individuals are not having families. And that's been that way for the past 20-some years. So what we're continuing to see is the decline in the workforce age population. And so employers are now not just struggling to find people with skills, but also to find bodies that they could even train with the skills. And the challenge with that is that it's national. It's not something just in Northeastern Pennsylvania. So this is one of the first times where we could say we are consistently following national trends.
Yeah. And I think, too, something that I read a lot about is that there is more focused on the Northeast, especially like as we look at those demographics, because the states that colleges traditionally pull a majority of their students from, whether it's within a 60-mile radius of the institution, or like the home state that we're in of Pennsylvania, or New York, New Jersey, Maryland, those states are some of the ones that are feeling this and seeing this the hardest. So I feel like there's even more of a spotlight on the Northeast, and especially Northeastern Pennsylvania.
I agree with you. We've been experiencing population decline because there have been more people leaving than moving in. And as I have a lot of Rust Belt states and Middle Atlantic states, because people are moving to the Southeast, the Southwest, because historically they've always been the land of opportunity. Climate has also been another driver, and they have been robbing the population of the Northeast United States and, of course, of Northeastern Pennsylvania for decades.
So from your perspective, because you talk to so many different groups of people, not just higher education, but also employers and chambers of commerce, you know, what type of like ripple effect does this have on those organizations, especially, you know, the employers in the area?
Well, we're already starting to hear how tough it is to find qualified people. And a lot of times they're saying just people. And so it's very real. I've heard it from employers that have occupations open at a variety of skill levels, a variety of higher education attainment levels. So it is quite apparent now that it's a problem, and businesses are going to be forced to rethink how they do business. I mean, certainly we have an aging worker component, and maybe we now seem to think that perhaps more part-time positions with folks that are retired but don't want to retire permanently, that we could create different kinds of hubs for them in companies. where that type of job is available. Maybe it's telecommuting for women who are home with young children or can only work hours that their children are in school. We also have to think of the immigrant population. We've had a large influx of Hispanic and Latino individuals, as well as Hindu and Gujarati and even Bhutanese. And what we're finding is a lot of them are educated and skilled in the countries they came from. But those certifications aren't recognized here. So you're finding engineers working in logistics firms as warehouse associates and things like that because their credentials aren't recognized here. So I think we need to start thinking out of the box now on how do we make it easier for people to take these jobs. Because it will become a crisis. And as I mentioned, it's a national crisis, which means Northeastern Pennsylvania is competing against every community across the country for a workforce.
And for us here at the college, we've been feeling this for a while now. Certainly now, you know, I feel like it's really at its peak. But, you know, we get calls from employers over the years all the time and just basically with the message to us saying, like, you can't produce your students fast enough. So while we're experiencing growth, we still feel the pressure to, you know, how can we continue to produce our very highly skilled students, but get them to industry that much faster. So I think it's sort of a call to action for higher ed, not just us. I feel it all, but I think for all of higher ed.
I would agree with you. Higher education in general has to reinvent itself and be more responsive to the market. And it's a huge challenge because traditional higher education institutions really have not operated on that timeline. And the academic timeline is a bit slower. And now, in order to remain competitive, because you're competing for a smaller market, first to market, so to speak, is going to be the winner. You're in a unique position because you have a different commodity than everybody else. You have a great menu of academic programs that really apply to so many different industries and so many different occupations within those industries. And so I'd say you are in an enviable position. And your toughest job is how can you scale up quick enough to meet that demand? And that's quite unusual.
And we're so fortunate to have the wonderful relationships with industry that we have. I always say we're founded and grounded in industry. We were founded by, you know, a coal baron who was really grounded in industry, and we've just sort of evolved from there and built off of that. Every single one of our programs has a program advisory committee, and so we can sort of listen and respond quickly, and hopefully we can continue to do that.
Well, that entrepreneurial mindset is really what's gotten you this far, and I think it's going to continue to do that because, like I said, I think you've developed a great menu of programs to be able to offer that's applicable to so many organizations, but then applicable to so many individuals. And that I don't think can be said for traditional higher education.
So speak, like, you know, I talked a little bit about our history. You know, is there a time that you can look back in history and see something similar, like what we're experiencing now with the skills gap? And if there is sort of that time in history, like, what do you think we should be learning from it?
You know, I was thinking about, as we try and find solutions to regional problems, we often do some research. Somebody has to have experienced and solved this before. But ironically, there really hasn't been a major skills gap of this magnitude. There have been times in history where there's been some issues, like there was a workforce shortage in the early World Wars because all of the men were in the armed forces, and that was one of the first times women just jumped into the workforce and really filled all sorts of positions within business and industry to do that backfill. The other time, I think, and it was on a much smaller scale, was really as computers started revolutionizing how businesses do business. And I would say that was probably in the mid-80s or so, early to mid-80s, and there was just a shortage of technically trained people and individuals who had the capacity to fix and program those kinds of machines. Mm-hmm. But again, not on the magnitude that we're having a skills gap now, because it's also covered with a general worker shortage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and there is, even though there's a lot of, you know, downside to that, there is opportunity within that. So are there sort of areas that, you know, sort of hope that you see, you know, whether it's higher ed or just any industry sort of taking, you know, advantage of and,
Wow. You know, I think there's incredible opportunity for all sectors. First, if you're a person of any age, continuing and lifelong learning is key.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's always something you thought you wanted to do but never felt you could try it,
mm-hmm.
Now's the time.
Yeah.
If it involves additional education and training,
mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely worth it. I think our young people going into higher ed now have incredible opportunity to essentially write their own tickets when
yeah.
they graduate and really get their mm-hmm. dream job earlier on than their baby boomer parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's opportunity there. I also think the business has opportunity because with this change, it requires them to innovate.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when there's innovation, a lot of good things happen. So businesses are going to have to be innovative in how they set up their workforces.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe more part-time workers, telecommuters, more on-the-job training than they've done before. They're also going to have to be a little bit more competitive
mm-hmm.
because if you have a similar industry cluster in a community, you're competing for the same type of worker. And, you know, company A can offer a few dollars more an hour and all these perks, and company B's people see
mm-hmm.
that, they're going to start gravitating over here
yeah.
because they know how
mm-hmm.
easy it is going to be to get hired.
Yeah.
And then if B sees that and goes up. So I also think it gives us a great opportunity to elevate the standard of living in the region.
Yes.
More opportunities for low-income individuals to get those family-sustaining jobs because there's more willingness of employers to take a non-qualified person
yeah.
and make them qualified.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that. And I've had a lot of conversations with employers about that. And so often, I think there's maybe this misperception that students, you know, especially like the younger generation going from high school to a two-year college into the workforce, that students are only focused on maybe that 50 cents more an hour or a dollar more an hour. So, you know, talking to a lot of employers, we brought students and employers together for a panel back in, you know, the fall. And I said to the employers, you want to know what the future workforce wants? We'll bring you together and you can ask them. And they did. And I think they were, you know, a little surprised by some of what the students said. And it wasn't necessarily money. It was the things that you just talked about. Is there the two biggest things for our students were the flexibility and can they apply what they're learning in school immediately. They want sort of that you know, being able to see a difference almost from the first day that they walk into the employer's door. So it was wonderful because it opened up this whole new dialogue for employers that, again, it's not just me saying it.
Mm-hmm.
You heard directly from the future workforce. And, you know, to your point, I think they really recognize, you know what, we might need to rethink a little bit. These aren't just jobs. Students aren't just looking for the next best job, but they're really trying to take a step back and look at this as their career. And I've had some great conversations with employers about how to then build career paths for students and not just looking at it as a job.
I think that's great advice. And I would agree that the younger generation of recent graduates, probably until their mid-30s, are really excited about making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
They want to
yeah.
see that what they're contributing has value and has impact.
Mm-hmm.
And they do like that flexibility. There is definitely more of a work-life balance
mm-hmm.
in there than their baby boomer parents
yeah.
who were just drive
yeah.
until you drop. I think where the money comes into focus are more families
mm-hmm.
that have been dealing with that I can't meet my basic needs
yeah.
to and get support, or just above the level where you can get support and still struggling to survive. Mm-hmm. So those wages come into play with that group.
Yeah.
So I think employers need to be much more flexible in recognizing that there's a variety of different types of cohorts of employees,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to have different values.
Right.
And they have to be flexible enough. And mm-hmm. it's going to be a challenge because now business is kind of on the receiving end.
Yeah.
And has to rise to the challenge. And I think historically there's always been so many people looking for work, they mm-hmm. could really be particular
yeah.
and very rigid mm-hmm. in what they do. So
yeah.
this is a big challenge.
Yeah.
And it's going to be easier for some companies
mm-hmm.
that are more entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
It's going to be harder for smaller companies that maybe that can't compete on that grander
mm-hmm.
scale. So it's definitely going to bring about a unique set of challenges. But like I said, where there are challenges, it does bring opportunity.
Yeah.
So I have hope for the future.
Yeah, I do too. I'm actually really excited because I think the employers that I meet with are too. I think they're actually looking to, you know, higher ed, almost taking a page out of our playbook, because I feel we've gotten really good over the years of looking at like taking a step back, looking at the whole student. What do they need to be successful? Understanding that, like you said, like not everybody follows the same path into work. Not everybody follows the same path once they're mm-hmm. in a position, and really taking a step back and saying, okay, how do we maybe customize this a little bit, and, you know, don't just feel as if every single employee that comes their way is going to want the same things and
mm-hmm.
and go on the same path, but really trying to look at their employees
mm-hmm.
holistically.
I think businesses are also going to face some unique challenges in barriers
yeah.
that are impacting workers.
Mm-hmm.
Transportation regionally is
yeah.
one of them, and I think that's been a really hot topic the past couple of years,
mm-hmm.
Thanks to the Scranton Area Foundation. Childcare is another.
Mm-hmm.
Affordable yeah. and even available childcare is also a huge challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so that then becomes another challenge for employers to work with agencies and local governments
mm-hmm.
and employees themselves to help find these solutions. Because we do know that there are more people out there that could be participating in the labor force that aren't,
mm-hmm.
and many of them are burdened with these types of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could be addressed in some way, shape, or form, you know, then we may have more of an available workforce than we think. You know, we recently heard about Governor Wolf's program
mm-hmm.
and making public higher ed more affordable, and certainly that is an action by the government. I think where we could be more effective in Pennsylvania is workforce development.
Mm-hmm.
I think generally the system that's in place is not as effective as it could be. And it also seems fragmented. There's a variety of different organizations doing different things,
mm-hmm.
which are all good things, but they're also not connected.
Yeah.
And it's not cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that respect, modeling a workforce development system after another state that's done it right, that has showed some
mm-hmm.
years of success, might be a good next step.
Yeah.
And especially since they would be in a position to connect displaced workers,
mm-hmm.
as well as individuals who've been out of the labor force for whatever reason, and maybe connect them with all sorts of services in addition
mm-hmm.
to job training.
Yeah.
'Cause I think that's another area we need to think about is workforce development as it relates to social services.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, reentry
mm-hmm.
as a component of workforce
yeah.
development. We have a large population that have records.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are misdemeanor types
mm-hmm.
of charges, but because of the whole criminal justice system, they've been in jail.
Yeah.
And many of it may be due to mental health or substance abuse. But if you deal with those things,
mm-hmm.
Then you're likely to have a productive worker.
Yeah.
And so I think we could do things a lot better by
yeah.
connecting the dots. And maybe it does need to start systemically and through mm-hmm. legislation.
Yeah. So do you see, you said something interesting, like maybe look to like another state or some another area that's doing it well. So do you know of another area that you would say, ooh, like we should look there and maybe?
We did a paper on it a couple years ago, and there's a couple states in the Midwest that seem to have a good track record of success with their workforce development initiatives, and that might be a starting point. Mm-hmm. Since it is a couple years old, I'd like to take another look.
Yeah.
But I certainly think there are things that we can glean that have worked well for mm-hmm. other states.
Yeah, I know, again, going back to our history, there's a lot of like the coal and sort of being a one industry region. Do you hear about that?
People are stuck in the past. we need to get away from that. It's great to have history,
mm-hmm.
but it's history.
Right.
So we need to live in the present and plan mm-hmm. for the future and realize that Northeastern Pennsylvania is very diverse.
Yeah.
We have a very diverse industry base, which mm-hmm. is extremely critical. It means our economy is not dependent on one sector
yeah.
like it used to be on coal.
Mm-hmm.
So when coal went away, we lost 80% of our jobs, 50%
right.
of our population,
mm-hmm.
and it was a disaster. Now there's some resiliency there in having
yeah.
that diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we can say that there are the top three clusters
mm-hmm.
in the region are dealing with healthcare and education, manufacturing and logistics. Those
mm-hmm.
are the top three employers by industry in Northeastern Pennsylvania. So
mm-hmm.
under those industry codes, obviously there's a whole variety of
yes.
occupations from very low skill to very high skill, but those are the three.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a presence of everything here and
yeah.
opportunity within those.
Yeah, I always say, like, I think it's just great that we are that diverse economy. I'm like, we don't want to go backwards. Let's
yeah.
not.
yeah.
Let's learn.
We do tend to get stuck in the past and,
mm-hmm.
and think about,
yeah.
you know, change is bad. No, change is really good because
right.
look where we are now,
mm-hmm.
and
look
that's where our
focus
should be.
Yeah.
It's great to have history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to say that's what it was, but
yeah.
let's focus on the here and now
mm-hmm.
and how we drive our region to that next
yeah.
level.
If you could just sort of, you know, give me a sense of, again, thinking about the demographics of this region, like who are the minimum wage earners in the area? And, you know, what programs or what's the framework that exists to sort of help, you know, elevate them and move them maybe from one economic point to another?
The minimum wage workers are those working in retail, they're working in hospitality, and they're working in service industries, and not as part-timers trying to earn extra dollars. That's their primary careers. And those are mostly individuals that either did not graduate high school or did graduate high school but have no other training, no other education. And what we've done in our living wage study is to track how much it actually costs to live in Northeastern Pennsylvania
mm-hmm.
and what you have to earn to meet basic needs.
Yeah.
So not the fancy cable package, not
mm-hmm.
the vacation, not even the savings account. And it's for a single person, it's a little over $19. So you suddenly add on another person or a child,
mm-hmm.
and it goes up from there. So you can imagine that somebody would have to work 3 minimum wage jobs,
mm-hmm.
about 40 hours a week each, to get to where they need to be. It's not feasible. It's certainly not feasible to raise the minimum wage to that level.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, we need to look at, okay, perhaps raising the minimum wage somewhat, but then how can we elevate those individuals? And that's the tricky part,
mm-hmm.
because I think that the way workforce development is now is if they find a person a job, that's a success and you move on. But it's not, okay, now that we have that person employed, what can we do as a system to get them the next level of skills so they can move on to something more family sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not there. Even if it's, you know, retail store management or something like that where you would earn a higher wage, that ongoing training isn't in place. There isn't a system that can connect the dots. So individuals get lost that way. And, you know, retail is one of the largest employment segments in every single economy. And a lot of people do it because they're semi-retired or because it's a part-time gig in addition to their real job. But for some people, that's their livelihood, and that's where we have a challenge, and that's why we have a huge gap, and our economy is turning into one with more the haves and the have-nots, and more people are falling into that have-not section.
So going back to something you said, which is really interesting, so from your perspective, like, someone entering retail, like, there aren't those mechanisms in place to sort of help that individual even move up within that sector. Did I get that?
Yeah, there's right? there's no formal system that can say, okay, here's a retail management training program, unless it's company driven.
Right.
And if you've got a good manager who wants to bring people along, knowing that there's opportunities within the company in the area or across the U.S., it's there, but you're relying on the person at that point to be the driver. So there's no systemic thing in place that can help that person and meet with that person and say, okay, Katie, you're working here 30 hours a week at minimum wage. What do you really want to do? How can we help you get to that next level? And then help develop a program, whether it's an online training program or weekender or something to get you credentialed, skilled, educated, degreed so that you can move to that next level.
Yeah, that's great. I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, helping employers understand that, you know, again, looking at the whole person, what is like that individual's career path going to look like? And I think, you know, it sounds like maybe, you know, we can even share with employers that maybe there needs to be a deeper understanding of how to develop some of those mechanisms.
I think that would be great. I think you develop a loyalty then, and so that even there's more of a prominence now of people staying in jobs 2-3 years and moving on, you may be able to build that loyalty through that kind of initiative and bring them along within the company.
So where do you see all this going? Where do you, if you look out into the future of Northeastern Pennsylvania, and what's some of like the data telling you about maybe not 5 years from now, but even, you know, 10 years from now?
We've come a long way economically as a region. You know, when the recession hit in 2008, we didn't seem to be hit as hard as other communities and regions. And I mentioned in part it's because of that economic diversity, so there was some resilience. However, it did take longer for us to recover than most other areas of the country. And where we are now is we've got a big divide. We've got about a quarter of our households in the region that earn less than $25,000 a year. And we know that's not family sustaining. We are seeing strides of folks earning 100 or more thousand increasing. But what's happening is those incomes in the middle, they're reducing, and we're seeing them going into more of that low income and more into that high income. So that's where education and workforce become a major driver. I think there's incredible opportunity for everybody. And we just have to be able to harness it. Business has to do business differently. Government and social service has to do business differently. And if we can make that work, we'll be successful. The bigger challenge is the body count. And the fact that that means we compete against other regions across the country for that limited body count. So it becomes a point where even community-wise, we have to think differently. Is this the place where people want to live? Why? And if not, what do we have to do to correct it? Is it a matter of making sure that there's no potholes, that there's more green space publicly? Yeah. Do we need to have more of a nightlife, more of a 24/7 economy, better downtowns, different types of housing? How can we build a community that people want to live in so we don't lose people and we can be successful at attracting people to fill our jobs?
That's a great point. And you know, one thing about, you know, Johnson College students, you know, a majority are from here, but they also want to stay here. You know, looking at our alumni data, like close to 90% of all of our alumni, we look at all that data and they either stayed or are in within probably a 60 to 90 mile radius. So again, like, we, our challenge, like, we need to, you know, produce more of our, you know, skilled students faster. But I think I always like to say we contribute to the brain gain as opposed to the brain drain. Because, you know, I often talk to students still, not students from here, but even in secondary, and they're like, well, are there that many opportunities for me here? Why am I going to stay here? And I'm like, no, that's like nails on a chalkboard to me. There's wonderful. Even it's like, if you don't come to Johnson College, I look at like the number of amazing institutions between here and Luzerne County. And I'm like, I came to Pennsylvania to go to school. I'm from New York originally. I came to Pennsylvania to go to school, and I just see so many wonderful institutions here, and again, those wonderful career opportunities. So, you know, I've been trying to deconstruct that a little bit, and how can I frame it? Because I think they expected to hear it from me. Well, of course, she's a college president. Of course, she's going to say we should say there's a ton of opportunity. But I try to share that with my you know, fellow college presidents. Like, hey, there's still, you know, high school students still think we're, you know, they're not looking at the region. So again, to your point, how do we change the entire regional narrative?
That's another perception that we have to beat in the area. And you're right, it's not only high school kids. Mm-hmm. We conduct polls of college students across the region, and that's one of the questions. Mm-hmm. Would you remain in northeastern Pennsylvania after graduation? Yeah. If not, why? Mm-hmm. Or if so, why? And the majority of the response, I don't think there's the job opportunities here, mm-hmm. the economic opportunities. And if you talk to parents of kids here and from elsewhere, they also don't see it. So mm-hmm. we're not sending the right message.
Yeah.
There is incredible opportunity here, and we have to be better at getting that word out.
Yeah, and I feel, you know, that's one thing I learned very quickly when I became president. I'm like, I have this like tremendous responsibility, not just to be an advocate and the ambassador for Johnson College, but again, I really recognized it very quickly. It is about the region. Like, mm-hmm. we're just one, you know, regional asset, but there's so many
very interconnected
others. Yeah.
And interdependent.
Yes.
And that's the critical mm-hmm. aspect of which we can see it in the trends of a number of data sets over time. And it's why we promote regional solutions, because you know, getting one community or one county to elevate is great, but it's not going to be sustainable if we don't get the other county to rise with it.
Yeah.
The population that lives here goes across the county line every day to work or shop or mm-hmm. you know, whatever. It's those geographic or political boundaries that hold some decision makers back, mm-hmm. and that's what we have to get past.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with someone who said that the reason why we're stuck in a lot of this is because when you say northeastern Pennsylvania, there's this perception of northeastern Pennsylvania 50 years ago, when there was an opportunity and it was grim and it was bleak, and he said we ought to rebrand,
mm-hmm.
you know, upstate Pennsylvania or something different. He said it worked for New York, so why can't it
That's
work
right.
for us? And of course it was the director of the Luzerne County Tourism Bureau, but you know, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are stuck on history, we are stuck on the past, and maybe a name change will do it, but mm-hmm. we really need to make people understand that there is incredible opportunity here, and that the quality of life here is pretty good regardless of what age you're at.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I noticed when I moved here. I think I mentioned I'm from New York originally. I went to school at York College down in York, Pennsylvania. My husband was from this area, so of course when we met at York, like all good people from this area, he wanted to move back here, and he was looking for an opportunity to move back. So when we were ready to start our family, we wanted to be closer to family, mm-hmm. and that, you know, was our impetus to move back here. But once I was here, I was like, wow, like this is, sometimes we like shoot ourselves in the foot, to your point. Like, there's, you know, we sometimes take for granted all the wonderful things that are right in front of us. And this is just a great region with so many wonderful resources. And I think it might take us coming together and saying, you know what, we just have to stop being down on ourselves and pull together and exactly. just start talking about what is so great about
We're our own worst enemy when it comes to that. The things that we have in our backyard, we tend to miss.
Yeah. And I think, too, some of that comes out, like, through, like, the more partnerships that can be created. I know I'm a big proponent of partnerships, and I challenge myself sometimes to pause and sort of remind myself that if there's a challenge we're dealing with here at the institution, that I, you know, we don't have to go it alone. I can reach out to nonprofits or to, you know, my fellow institutions and say, you know what, again, if we want to look at stackable credentials, you know, again, it shouldn't stop at 2 years. Like, you know, I could reach out to the other colleges in the area and say, hey, we should have more articulation agreements in case students do want to go on for their education after the 2 years here.
Great.
Yeah.
That is great.
And same with, like, nonprofits. You know, we talked about, you know, individuals, you know, the immigrant population, the reentry population. We're not experts in that, and nor do we need to be. We're missing the boat.
Yeah. We are definitely missing the boat, because the Hispanic Latino population in particular, the folks that have gravitated here from the various South and Central American countries are very familial oriented. So they're inviting family members of intergenerational levels because they like living here, but they're also very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And there, you could see some elements where in some communities